This audio comes to you from the Science of Mind archives.
Ready for the service, those who get up early enough, and that means the ones who are here, to see what we can do with this thing we believe in, because we believe that we are one with and one in a creative intelligence that governs everything. And that the secret throughout the ages to answered prayer has not been supplication or the way that people prayed, but has been what happened to them when they prayed. Now Jesus announced it in a very simple way. He said, it's done unto you as you believe. He implied then that the answer to prayer is a reaction to the prayer at the level of the belief and acceptance in the prayer by the one who prayed when he prayed. It's as simple as that. Consequently, then, the answer to prayer, in a certain sense, must be in the mind of the one who prays because of his own acceptance. You will watch very carefully in what we call spiritual mind treatment, which is a definite and conscious doing of this. And in your own practice, if your time is spent causing your own mind to believe, you will find that when you do that, something will happen in the external world. Now, if you were to ask me why, I don't know, because I never speak with dogmatism, as you know. The only thing I'm an authority in is I recognize my own stupidity. And that's the very beginning of wisdom. There are no spiritual authorities. You ask a physicist, why does gravitational force work, he can't tell you. You ask him what is it, he can't tell you. You ask him what it looks like, he can't tell you. All he knows that it is, and this is the way it works. That's all we know about spiritual things. But about spiritual things, there is an inwardness in us, a deep interior inwardness that seems to know as though we were born with it. We call it intuition. So as we turn within to that divine center, which is both God and man, we know that we are one with the living spirit. And each says to himself, there is one life, that life is God, that life is my life, and that life is perfect right now. All the power, all the presence, and all the life that there is right here. I am that life. Each is thinking this. The life within me being God must be perfect, I accept it. The one perfect presence within me is complete, whole, happy, divine. All the power and intelligence and love that there is in the universe is right here and all the life, and I accept it. There is one life. That life is God, that life is my life, and that life is perfect. Now let us see. Whoever has anything wrong with him, if he cannot say, whatever there is in me that does not belong, I lose it. I believe it's detached. Spirit within me separates it from me. I accept that it is uprooted, that it doesn't have to be, and that it isn't, and that it isn't going to be. I let that mind be in me, which was Christ, that is, the Son of God. Now, how very easy it is for the spirit within us to separate from us everything that doesn't belong, to liquidate, to uproot, to cast out anything that does not belong. How easy. You and I do not know anything about it. But our acceptance of it permits, not only permits, but impels it to operate that way, and it cannot fail. And we are accepting right now the divine intelligence, the divine love and reason. Therefore, as we again say, there is one life, that life is God. That life is my life, and that life is perfect. Let us believe that anything that does not belong to that life is removed right now. Now, this is equal. Jesus said, when you pray, believe that you have. It's done unto you as you believe, therefore believe you have. Let us believe. Without too much effort, without any strain, that we have accepted the perfect life within us. It is good. It is God. And it is manifested right now in and through us at the level of that acceptance, right now, and everyone in this room right now. And it is perfect right now. And now we know that divine guidance is ours. We are guided and guarded. Suppose someone came here this morning with a problem. Let us say, we have to admit we have problems. We're not trying to lie to ourselves, but God has no problem. Therefore, we will take our problem. I'm thinking of something now I don't just quite know how to do. Several other people are interested in it. I am going to say there is an intelligence within me. Now, you say that if you have a problem. That knows what to do right now. It not only knows what to do, but it compels me to operate intelligently, constructively, creatively, so that this thing will be solved in joy and happiness and with lasting success. There can be nothing else but that. There is one life. That life is God, that life is my life, and that life is perfect right now. Here it is. Divine intelligence is guiding me in this particular thing. Now, we're making it definite. We are dealing with a law as definite as the law that takes a cabbage seed, makes a cabbage, and the cauliflower seed makes cauliflower right beside of it. Because the creative principle is given more than one idea. Now we're doing the same thing. It's the same law. Because the universe is a mental, spiritual system, that is, it's a thing of intelligence acting as law. Therefore, we say, this particular need is answered. I accept all the good there is, all the abundance, all the right action. I am divinely, intelligently guided and guarded. I do know what to do under every circumstance and situation whatsoever. I do have faith. Now let us do another thing I am very interested in our doing. I want to prove to you it can be done. We are now going to treat, or if you want to say pray or affirm, I don't care what you call it. We're going to convince ourselves, and that's all any of it can be. It's a cinch we don't tell God. Whittier said, the Lord is God and needeth not the poor device of man. We cannot tell an egg how to make a chicken, and we cannot inform a chicken how to lay an egg. But we can set a hen. Now let's treat to know that new ideas are coming to us, new ways of doing things. We're going to meet new people, new situations. Completely new and wonderful and beautiful and happy and proper, prosperous and joyous things are going to happen to us right now. Now, to get it right back to the personal factor where it's the most direct, let's make it each personal to himself and say, I now entertain new thoughts, new ideas, new friends, extending and increasing happiness and joy. I desire to give this out to everyone I meet. I want it to be that every situation I touch shall be blessed, every person I meet shall be helped, everything I do shall be successful, everyone shall be made happy. I want love and joy and beauty to go forth from me to heal and to help, and I accept my own wholeness that it may be so. I bless everything I do. I multiply and increase everything I do. I expect more. New thoughts, new ideas, everything is made new. And nothing in yesterday, no mistake, nothing that ever happened up to this very split second can deter or procrastinate or defer or delay that which is good in my experience. I accept it all. And so it is. Now, we're going right on where we left off last week. These first four lessons, our lessons. I hope you can see the blackboard, can you? I don't know what I'd do about it if you couldn't, but it sounds helpful, doesn't it? Kind of sweet and kind to us. So very considerate. I would just like to briefly go over what we said last week. We are studying the nature of God, life, the principle of our being, the thing to which we pray, or the thing we affirm about. And the conclusions we draw are pretty much those that have been drawn throughout the ages by all the great thinkers who have ever lived. You would find them in all the ancient religions. They are the cornerstone of the Greek philosophy. See, the Greeks were the greatest line of intellectual thinkers who ever lived. They are the very root and branch of the Christian philosophy, which is a combination of the philosophy of the ancient Hebrews and the Greeks. That's where the philosophy of Christianity came from. A lot of people think it originated in Ireland or England or maybe New England. It didn't. It came quite a little bit before that. See, Christianity is the most terrific philosophy in the world, but very few people understand it, and none of us practice it. Therefore, we don't know what it might do for us if we tried it. It might be, really, something. I think it would be. Now, they all decided that God, our life, is a threefold reality, which... by the way, we describe it as a circle merely because the circle has always stood for infinity. You see, it has no beginning and it has no end. It's like a very ardent young lover gave a ring to his girl and he said, "Darling, this symbolizes my love for you. It has neither beginning nor end." She passed it back. It has... And she said it symbolizes... No, I've got it all wrong. He said it has no end. She passed it back. She says it's like mine. It has no beginning. That makes it come out exactly even, doesn't it? Now, in antiquity, and you'll find this in the Christian Bible, which is the Jewish Bible, the Old Testament, speaks of the snake, which represented the life principle, and it used to be a serpent in the form of a hook with a tail in its mouth, because the hook is the only thing that is a symbol, the circle, of infinity. You see, that which is without beginning or end cannot be described by a straight line. Therefore, God has always been described as a circle whose center is everywhere and whose circumference is nowhere. It's rather interesting because everything moves in circles. Emerson's essay on circles describes that. And Einstein has told us that light, time, and space bend back upon themselves. Everything moves in circles. It's the meaning of Emerson's lecture on compensation, his essay, "As a man sows, so shall he also reap." It's the meaning of karma in India, which means the fruit of action, action and reaction. Well, everything moves in circles. We know that scientifically. And so does thought. Whatever goes out will come back again. Now, we describe God, our life, as an infinite knower, we'll say, doer, and the effect of what is done. Now, we call this spirit, which means self-consciousness, soul, or psyche, which means subconscious reaction, as law, and body. Now we're talking about God. The universe is the body of God. Pope said, "All are parts of one stupendous whole, whose body nature is with God the soul." There is something in the universe that knows, just as we know, only it knows infinitely. Something happens to what it knows. It acts as law. For instance, Eddington said, Gene said, we can think of the universe as an infinite thinker thinking mathematically. This thought is spontaneous, like it is self-conscious. The reaction is subconscious, or as law, acting intelligently. Or Eddington says, all law is law is intelligence acting as law. And Alexis Carrel said that faith and prayer, the prayer of faith, act like a law. But what I want to have in mind now is that just as we are conscious beings, we speak of the conscious mind, self-proclaiming intelligence, and then we speak of the subconscious reaction or consciousness. For instance, one prophet has said consciousness constructs a better body when properly instructed. All mean the same thing. All these people try to make their meaning different because everybody wants to be different, but everybody's just alike. And that's the only difference. That's all the difference there could be. The identity is just a little different in the face, but we're all rooted in the same creative soil, which is God. And we want to keep that in mind always and not be confused by terminology. Every modern system of spiritual thought, I don't care what it calls itself in the metaphysical or the new thought fields, there are 15 or 20 of them, they all teach the same thing, but they hate to admit it. Well, what I got from all of them, sort of stole it. And I'm glad to admit it, because I wouldn't want to have to carry around the intellectual liability of thinking I made it up. I'd get a headache just thinking about it. It isn't necessary that there shall be just one electrician in Santa Monica who discovered everything there was about electricity and that everybody else's discovery was wrong, and he is the only guy who knows about it. That's nonsense. It's just as much nonsense when you come to spiritual and philosophic things. What you and I have, we have inherited from the ages. And if we'll have sense enough to take the best they've all got, because truth doesn't belong to anybody, we'll probably be the smartest people living. And I believe exactly in doing that. That's the way science advances. Every modern metaphysical movement today believes exactly what I'm teaching you, but they call it something different. There is in the universe a self-knower, God. I am that I am. And this God works by the word, thought, or idea. In the beginning was the word. The word, thought, or idea becomes law. See? The law of the Lord is perfect. I will meditate upon thy law day and night. He sent out his word and healed him. It acts as law. if there is a prayer of faith, and there is, if there is a treatment, spiritual mind treatment, which can be effectual, and there is, then there has to be a way that it works, and this is the way it works. There's no mystery about it, other than the mystery of life itself. And the Word became flesh, acted as law, became flesh, see, and dwelt among us. Now, this is why the Bible says that the invisible things of God are made manifest by the visible. Because the invisible things of God, from the foundation of the world, are made manifest by the visible. Somebody else, can you hear me when I turn around? That's wonderful. You got better ears than I have. I have good ears. I don't hear that well. That is, I have one on each side. About the best I could do. But did you know there's something about us that hears without the ears? One of the great things, I knew this 40 years ago, but one of the great things that Dr. Ryan has demonstrated at Duke University is that there is something that hears without the ears, communicates without the tongue, moves physical objects without physical contact, sees without the eyes. What is it? It's the knower, invisible. So someone said the riddle of life is understood only by him who knows that God is good. As only he can know, who makes a ladder of his faith and climbs from sense to soul and draws no line between mere human goodness and divine, but judging God by what in man is best, with a child's trust, leans on a father's breast. That's a poetical way of saying something that every science uses. But they say we go from the known to the unknown. We judge the nature of the invisible by seeing how the visible works. You take psychosomatic medicine. All in the world it is showing the relationship between, let me show you. There's no mystery about it. That's conscious, this is unconscious, or subconscious, and here's the result. Well, now what does psychosomatic mean? Psyche means soul, a subjective mind. Soma means body, pneuma. I guess that's the way you spell it. I don't know how to spell much of anything. But I think it's P-N-E-U-M-A, and if it isn't, don't bother to tell me, because I'll forget it just as soon as you tell me. And be like the little boy, you know, his father thought he was a fool. So he went to town one day to do some shopping. They live in the country, and he set him up in the wagon. He says, "Now, Johnny, you're a fool, and I don't want everybody to know it. No matter who says what, don't answer him." So the old guy went in to do some trading, and when he came out, while he was gone, somebody came along and said it. He says, "Aren't you Johnny Smith? Aren't you Tom Smith's son? And lives out in the country?" He just looked straight ahead and never answered. And the man said, "You must be a fool." And he walked down. So when his father came, I said, "Johnny, did you say anything?" He says, "No, Dad, but they found out anyway." And you see, the old Chinese sage said, "How can a man conceal himself?" Well, pneuma means spirit, psyche means soul, soma means body, and the Greeks said we are spirit, soul, and body. Now, in our language today, we would call this the conscious active intelligence, the subconscious reactive and creative, and the result. Therefore, psychosomatic medicine is really the relationship that this thing here has established between this and this, or the subjective mind and the body, by some law of reflection that causes this to reflect itself in there. That's what psychosomatic medicine is. That's what analytical psychology is. That's what psychiatry is. But of course it isn't as simple as it sounds. Their business is to uncover and see what causes it. Now, What I want to establish is that there is something just like that in the universe itself. You know, you and I come out of the universe. We're in it. It's in us. We, the ancients said, we are a microcosm within a macrocosm. That is, a little world within a big world, just like this. Let's say that represents God. Let's say each one of these smaller circles represent John, Mary, and 100 billion other people. Doesn't matter. Is there any difference between what's here and what's here? Not a bit. All right, let's take the circle off and say each one of these represent a person. That person is the infinite flowing into that person. That's why Jesus said, it is not I but the Father who dwelleth in me, he doeth the works. But the Father is greater than I. And that's why it is said that every man is a center of consciousness in God. Isn't that rather interesting? That's why Jesus said, who hath seen me hath seen the Father. The son of Mohammed, the husband of Fatima, now whether they named the cigarette from her or not, I don't know, but she was a fat girl, and I guess that's good in that country like it is in Alaska. But he said that if you split the atom, you will find the sun. Now they've done that, nuclear physics. Let us add, this is what Jesus discovered. Split the human atom and you will find God, because there's nothing else we can be made out of. You see, God means what is, or the truth, or the spirit. And there is nothing else. I am that I am, beside which there is none other. And God is one. Hear, O Israel, eternal, the Lord thy God is one God, not two. Therefore, in you and in me is the divine essence. It is all in here. Now, it is self-evident. We can't think, well, that's the way it is anyway. And so what in here establishes our relationship to what seems to be outside ourselves. And this is the thing that we want to establish, that just as God is the thing, see? That's why we call it the thing itself. This is the way it works, see, through law. This is what it does. And what it does is the result of this acting upon this. This is the word, the law in operation, and the thing. That's what first four sections of our textbook devoted to, the thing, the way it works, what it does, and how to use it. It's fundamental to all these philosophies, and I would like to establish and reestablish our thought of last week, that we must conceive of the nature of the spiritual universe in which we are living in the most extraordinary manner, and yet science does it. It's a funny thing, religion hasn't done it, because religion's got so, so darn many things to scare it to death. And I thought that word isn't strong enough, and if I use a stronger sound, it'll sound wrong. Therefore, I won't even think about the other word. I won't permit myself to think it, because you're very liable to say what you think. And right now, I could be arrested for what I'm thinking, and I don't dare to say it. But theology is almost wrecked religion. Religion is normal. It's natural. It's spontaneous. It's something without which we're sick people. No man can live without God, and no man can live happily with a God he's scared of. Now, you and I believe God is all there is, and there isn't anything else. That is cause, medium, and effect. It's all God. But we must have some inward, inner, personal, immediate relationship with God. God is around us, about us, and within us. And that which is within the microcosm, that is the individual world, is also in the macrocosm. All that God is right in us, but we are not God. We are like that nature. And so as we say God must be the thing, the way it works and what it does, the Greeks said man is pneuma, psyche and soma, or spirit, soul and body. In modern psychology, psychiatry and analysis, we are dealing with the thing that knows and observes the action that takes place when it consciously and unconsciously makes an impression on itself and the result. Why does it do that? That it may straighten out the consciousness and cause the thinker to think directly again from the standpoint of the one perfect power. It calls it the id, you know. It wouldn't want to call it God because scared to death, feared to get religion. Now it's getting it in spite of itself. I think that's kind of a joke on modern psychology. It has reached the end of the finite and discovered that it lapses with and merges into the infinite, and modern psychology is at a loss to know what to do with it. But 50 years ago, Dr. James at Harvard understood that and said, the psychology of tomorrow will be metaphysics. But it will be metaphysics which does not deny the psychology, but sees, rather, the universal aspect of it. There is in the universe an all-knowing, self-knowing spirit, soul, and mind, God, the eternal. Now we have to start with a supposition, and this is the secret, or one of them. We are surrounded by, and there is in us, a birthless, a deathless, and a perfect principle and presence. We didn't put it there, and it's a cinch we can't get rid of it. All we can do is to accept it like we accept gravitation. If you and I could do that as easily as science accepts its facts, we'd become the greatest race of people who ever lived. Because we would add to this the silent communication with a living spirit and every man. Now, it's a very interesting thing, but all the great thinkers have believed what I'm talking about. The modern science of the mind proves that they were right. Now what you and I have to do is something that's very easy but very hard, and at first we will say we don't understand it, and we won't understand it because it's so simple. And that's this: find out what's true about nature, then say that's true about me. Find out what's true about me. And it's got to be true about nature because nature made me. And that is why it said I'm in the image and likeness of God. God and nature are the same thing. Therefore, there has to be a creativity within me. Now, I want to establish something about this. You'll find it in our textbook as you study it and in our home study course, which I hope you'll all get. It's the most valuable single set of literature in the world, in our world, I think. And that's this. I want to establish, let us say that this is a garden of 100 acres. Now this will be one of the most important things you'll ever learn in our science. Let's say it's 100 acres, and each one of these is an acre, you see, and there are 100 of them. Now really, the acre lot is merely this whole thing, just with a fence around it, isn't it? Is there any difference between the 100 acres and any 1 acre? Is there any difference between the essence that's in the 1 acre and the 100 acres? Not at all. Now we must feel the same way. You take gravitational force. Gravity holds everything. There are hundreds of people. It holds each one of us in place. But no two of us are alike. We are all human beings, but we are different. We are individuals, as we should be. But the same gravity holds us in the place that we put ourselves. Stand on our head or our feet. Or each might plant in his own garden a different kind of a plant, and the one creative soil would produce it. Now, let me ask you this. You and I, each one of us here, had an acre of land abutting each other, and we will say there were 1,000 acres of land in this piece. But every acre is like every other acre. Each one of us is merely using his acre, but the same creative power flows through or is in all acres. Every one of us is using it. We would be using an impersonal creative law for personal purposes, wouldn't we? Is that clear? It's exactly that way. When we come to realize there's only one creative mind. You see, no one is good and no one is bad. No one is altogether right and wrong. No one is lost and no one is saved. We are all living in a creative principle which reacts to us, and it reacts to us the way we act toward it. Nothing can be more important than this. You see, the difference between psychology and metaphysics, and I believe in both, I believe in anything that's true, is they deal with an individual mind and we deal only with an individualized mind. Is there any individual harmony in the universe? Is there any individual mathematics? Is there any individual chemical affinity? Of course not. Is there any individual gravitational force? Most certainly not. Every individual is using a universal potential, and where he uses it, he creates the sum total of his use. Psychology analyzes it and calls it his subjective mind, and there is no such thing. Would everybody who understands that put your hand up, please? Doesn't anybody understand it? Well, I don't either, so it doesn't matter. But it's awfully important. Let me do it another way. I'm going to do this till I get it done. At least I know what I mean, even though what I mean isn't so. But it is. I think, and something happens to my thought. We say it becomes subconscious or subjective. You all know what we mean by the subconscious. Get out of it, what's wrong? All I'm trying to add to that is this. My subconscious mind is merely the place where I, as an individual, am using a universal law that works that way. Is that clear? It's mine only that being the use I make of it, it's attached to me. Now, Jung calls this the individual unconscious. The whole world belief he called the collective unconscious. The Bible called it carnal mind. Somebody else called it the mortal mind. I don't care what you call it or who called it what. It makes no difference to me. I have no reverence for antiquity. Why should you? I don't even like antique furniture unless you can use it. What good is it? A house is full of it. Just another confession. Shakespeare said, "Consistency, thou art a jewel, seldom worn." But if we could establish this, now there's a big difference. Whether I think I have to make it work, or whether I know there's something that can't help but work, but it can only do for me, react to me, as a law of reflection. So if I say yes, it will say yes. If I say no, it will say no. If I say good, it will say good. Ms. Wilcox said, life is a mirror of king and slave. 'Tis just what you are and do. Then give to the world the best that you have, and the best will come back to you. Jesus said, good measure, and so forth. This is the law of prayer that Jesus taught. It is done unto you as you believe. Here is the belief. Here is what happens. It is done. It seems as though then that if we plant a seed, here's a seed, see? We put the seed in the ground. Here's the ground. And this will give back to the seed something that was in the seed. The oak tree was in the acorn. In the opening chapters of Genesis said, this is the generation of the time when the plant was in the seed before the seed was in the ground. Now, that means the answer to prayer is in the prayer when you pray it. It's got to be. Otherwise, you've got a God who likes some people better than others. Please don't misunderstand me, unless you want to. I hope you won't. When I say, I do not believe in any God that knows the difference between a Catholic and a Protestant, do you? Or a Jew and a Gentile, then it would be terrible. There would be a difference. We must not project our ignorance into the universe and worship the reaction as though it were God. That's what we've done. We have made God in our image, rather than try to awaken the image of Him who is perfect. Well, Jesus said, when you pray, believe. Now, prayer is the activity of a conscious mind. We must believe. Why must we believe? He said, there is something that does it unto you as you believe. That's the way this thing works. As you believe. This is the law. This is the law of faith in the answer to prayer. That is why Carrel said, prayer, faith acts exactly like a law. It's reflection. Now Jesus said there's something that does it. This is the doer then. This is the knower. Or we'll say this is the conscious part of the universe. This is the subjective reaction of law. Now we've enlarged our own subconscious and made it fill all the universe because we haven't got a subconscious mind any more than we've got a law of electricity. All we've got's the itch, we'll say. But we don't possess universal realities. They possess us. They flow through everything. We have to think of that. Only one mind and we use it. Then, if it is done unto you as you believe, then when ye pray, believe that ye have it. Or the answer. That ye have, Jesus said. And ye shall receive, because the law of reflection will see that it's done that way. Now, it's a very interesting thing. And Jesus said, now, in order to do this, get quiet, close your eyes, go into the closet. The Father which heareth in secret will reward you openly. And knowing how frail we are and prone to suggestion, Jesus said, judge not according to appearances. It doesn't matter what it looks like. There is something that can change it. If you believe that it has done it, it will do it. Why did he say you must believe that it has done it? Because it hasn't. Same reason that you must set a hen or plant an acorn and cover it up in the creative medium which is to produce the plant. We do not know. That is faith. But every scientist has faith that when he uses the laws of nature in accord with the principle that he has uncovered, it will never fail him. You and I must be so convinced of what? That we can pray in secret or affirm in silence. That is why they are discovering in universities today that the prayer of affirmation takes precedent over any other kind. Couldn't be otherwise. You know, I get so, I feel right now like I could, if I were in the old religion and it wouldn't bother me any if you did it, I could jump up and down and say hallelujah. I feel so good. Every time I think of anything like this with enough clarity to understand it, and it's always clearer in my mind when I'm explaining it to someone, or this way, isn't that funny? Maybe a singer can't sing unless he has an audience. A teacher can't teach without one. There is no poem unless somebody listens to it, is there? Really? And as I think of the wonder of this, right now, I have an inward feeling of exaltation. It isn't insane, just kind of, it's kind of wonderful. I feel, my gosh, why didn't you know this a long time ago and do it better? That's the way I feel right now about myself, not about you. I don't know you, you don't know me. We are, in a sense, as much as we love each other, ships that pass in the night signaling each other, sometimes in distress, sometimes saying you are at the mouth of the Amazon, let down your buckets. But always enveloped in that great sea of life, which is God. Isn't it terrific as I think of it? Jesus actually taught that if I would train myself, I would first have to believe there is something greater than I am. A man would be a fool who didn't believe it. Then I mustn't be afraid of it. It's now discovered in universities that people who are afraid of hell can't pray affirmatively. Well, how could they? The climate is too uncomfortable. You can't relax in that much heat. You just itch all over. And there's more kinds of itch than appear at the surface. As a matter of fact, there'd never be any surface physical itch if they weren't an inward something that can't be scratched. It's true. It's coming to the surface to be scratched, and for no other reason. It's like perhaps there's no real heart trouble, but thousands of people die of a troubled heart. That's the way it begins. The end result is the same. Jesus actually said, get within yourself, don't be afraid. There is something that responds by co-response, or co-respondence, or reflection, or the seed, the plant, reflecting back what was in the seed. This is a generation of the time when the tree, the plant was in the seed before the seed was put in the ground. That's what that means. Now he said, in order that you shall not be confused, don't be disturbed by what it looks like. This is a pretty tough situation out here, he said. I know that. Lazarus is dead, but I go to awaken him. Here is the stone, the obstruction. He said, roll it away. They said, no. Here are the family weeping. It would have been easy enough to get caught once in a while at a funeral. I get so caught in it that I just think I can't go on. The moment you vibrate to all of that confusion and sadness, you enter right into it. To me, it almost envelops me because I'm psychic and more or less emotional and have great sympathy and love for people. And that's a place where I have to just step. Sometimes I grab hold of my thumb and pull it back so it'll hurt, so I'll want to holler. This is a confession of a preacher. But it's a good habit. I mean, I had to do it, or you just can't succumb. He didn't. Judge not according to appearance. Now he said, get within yourself and believe that ye have. Why? Until the seed is planted, it cannot bear fruit. It's all so simple. What in us stops us from belief? He said, the prince of this world comes and findeth nothing in me. I will say that if this represents the conscious mind, and this is sub or subjective or whatever you want to call it, the creative medium. Now, down here are the sum total of all of our thoughts and the thoughts of the whole human race. The apostle said, that which I would, I do not. That which I do, I would not. O miserable man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death? You and I have the experience of believing, and then something submerges us and we get confused. What is it? Out of here, the old thought patterns are repeating themselves. You say, well, I will be happy. So you will be happy. You remember what happened yesterday? Said, I will be successful. Didn't you fail last year? Where does this come from? Out of our own mind. It is now known that the argument of this mind is almost like a person. They besought Jesus not to cast them out. And so there's more to it than just this little endeavor. Over and over, we must practice the presence of God. We must affirm the unity of good. We must say, perhaps, I believe, and there is nothing in me that can destroy my belief. And gradually, because thoughts are things, and the thought of wholeness will dissolve the other kind, we find it less and less resistant, until finally. And this is why Jesus healed people in just passing them. There was no longer anything in him that denied what he affirmed. That's all the treatment is, my friends. It is merely staying with an idea. And that's why Kuei, in the realm of suggestion, brought his little string with 20 knots for each one to say day by day in every way, I am better and better. Until finally it broke down the resistance of what was called the subconscious or the unconscious and instilled a new affirmation of acceptance. Day by day in every way, I am trusting God. Day by day in every way, I am sensing love. Day by day in every way, I am feeling friendship. Day by day in every way, I am leaving the old and entering in the new. I know of no other way in practice. I only know that if I pray or give a treatment and nothing happens, I must not quit, I must not be discouraged. I am dealing with a scientific, certainly a mathematical reaction, somewhere, sometime. Somehow, the law will not fail me, therefore I must win. I would that you and I, here in the world today, so filled with doubt and uncertainty and fear and disillusionment, might provide a consciousness for each other that would be transcendent. What you and I believe is the greatest truth that has ever come to man. It is exactly as I have described it. It works the way I have told you. There are no prophets other than the wise. You can do it as well as anyone, if you know you can. Let us forevermore know that at long last we have at least reached this significant position. I shall no longer expect to discover any God away from myself. Therefore, I shall surrender myself wholeheartedly to that genius which brought me forth out of the womb of nature, conceived me in the silence of its own soul, and somehow or other sung a song as it did it. Somehow or other it imparted a great love. Somehow I feel its beneficent presence. And out of the stillness comes a voice which sings to me. And out of the silence peers a form which dances before me. And out of the darkness comes the light. You and I, alone with God, what a wonderful thought. And alone with each other, how beautiful, and not alone. For we are one with him, and he is one with us. And we are one with each other, and one heart beats in every breast. The heart of God. One mind thinks through every intellect. The all-knowing, one love pulsates. Love so infinite, deep and broad, that men have renamed it, called it God, and we would enter this temple. Fear and doubt and uncertainty must be brushed aside. I do not care what your religion is. It isn't of as much consequence to me as whether I put sugar in my next cup of coffee. I just want to be sure it's coffee, that's all. There is no religion without conviction. There is no such thing as a lost soul. Hell is as cold as Labrador. And the glory of God infuses all together. I would that we should know the holiness of wholeness, peace. Know that the pure in heart do see God, because they no longer defile their vision with that which denies him. Unto you and me come the great and the good and the wise, and offered to us the inheritance of the ages. Wouldst thou be made whole? We cannot do it. Unto him alone, unto life only, and the law of good, and nothing else, be glory and honor, dominion and power, both now and forevermore. Amen.
For more spiritual content like this, visit scienceofmindarchives.com.